We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hello, Perpetual Chess listeners. We have an exciting guest this week. He's a up-and-coming, yet already there, chess star, India's number three player, around number 33 in the world, depending on which day you check the ratings, but definitely making a lot of noise and doing some incredible things. Grandmaster Vidit Gujarati. Vidit, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So it speaks to how much of a fan I am of yours, both of your chess and how you present yourself, that you've got me up here at 6:55 in the morning on a Sunday. excuse me. Like a lot of chess players, I'm not really a morning person, but when I have the chance to talk to a player of your stature, I felt like I should take that opportunity.
Thanks a lot.
So you've been a busy guy. I follow you on Facebook. You've been a lot more active recently in terms of keeping your fans posted of what you're doing, and you just came back from this exhibition tournament in China, this rapid tournament. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, I was playing a rapid event in China. The format was like there's a world team, which consists of young players and the China's best team, like the top five. So it was a very interesting match. We played from 3rd April, something like this. 6th April. Actually, Chinese team played much better than the world team, clearly. I mean, they were dominating and we never had the lead. We were tied at some point, but we never even had the lead. So they won quite deservingly.
And you guys had a pretty strong team. You had Grandmasters Duda, Shanklin, back row. But playing against China's top five, I guess you were at a slight rating disadvantage, even with a team like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can just tell you one thing, like their lowest rated player was still higher rated than our highest rated player. So that says it all, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
In terms of rating.
Yeah. Although, again, you guys are all so strong that you were probably still fairly close together. But yeah, China's got, along with India, China's got some super strong young players, and you guys didn't bring your top five overall, although it wasn't India's top five versus China's top five. You were the lone Indian representative. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
And what was the rest of the experience like? Did you get to do any sightseeing or like playing blitz with your fellow grandmaster brethren?
It was a lot of fun, actually. The people in China, they were very friendly. And they were great hosts, I must say. They even took me around to have a look around the city, and it was very nice. And in general, I mean, I always, whenever I go to China, although the travel is painfully long, but I really like it there because the people, they are like very friendly and they respect chess players. That's the most important, and that's the main reason why I go to China.
Excellent. Yeah, and chess, of course, is doing quite well in India. There, you've got yourself and, of course, the legend Vishyanandan, so many up-and-coming players in addition to the established grandmaster. So how do you compare the chess culture in India to what you see when you visit China?
It's an interesting question, actually. I think in terms of average rating, they might be higher, if I'm not wrong. But I think if we see the next generation, like the number of talents which they're coming, I think India is much ahead this way because they do have some players. They have, and the common thing about both of the countries is like we both have a lot of underrated players. So whenever I meet some of my European friends, they always say that they hate playing against Indians or Chinese who are like 2200-2300 because that's not their real rating and they're just much stronger than that. I think you can draw many parallels when you compare these two. But otherwise, I think now if you consider the main team, I think we are very evenly matched. So I think if there's a match India versus China, which I think will happen this year, it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
Do you mean that will happen at the Olympiad?
Well, that and also they usually organize match with like Russia versus China and India versus China. So it's quite likely that it might happen this year.
As like a standalone match?
Yeah, as a standalone match, yeah.
Okay. And the Olympiad is on my list of topics to discuss because I've also seen on your Facebook page that you guys have already been training a bit. So it seems like you might be ahead of the curve or at least a bit more public about the team's preparation for what's coming up later this year.
Yeah, we had a very nice training session and it's the first time that I've interacted with Anand in this way, like in chess-wise. And he was there in the camp and overall it was so nice. We were just like getting to know each other better and stuff like that. We also looked at some chess. We did some other activities. Of course, we are taking this year's Olympiad very seriously. That's why we had this training camp and I'm glad that the Federation managed to do it so much in advance, so it really helps, I think.
Nice.
And
let me guess, Anand was a total jerk and not very impressive in analysis. I'm glad that you got that was a joke because, you know, every time we talk to someone of your stature who's had a chance to cross paths with him, they of course have nothing but good things to say about, obviously, you know, his chess reputation speaks for itself, but also just how he carries himself and presents himself as a sportsman. So,
yeah, definitely. He's very nice and humble and he was very friendly. So I never felt like, you know, he's, oh my God, Anand, something like this during the game. So he made sure that we feel comfortable around him. And talking about that, I don't remember a person who spoke negatively about him. I mean, that's quite a riddle. I mean, I have to find someone yet. Everybody's so positive about him, and correctly so.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys were just being nice to the older gentleman, but your buddy Sagar Shah was covering the training a little bit, and someone had a quote that said, you guys were doing lots of calculation exercises, and Anand always got there first in terms of solving the puzzles.
Yeah, I mean, he's very sharp, and everybody knows that. I mean, when he's attacking, he's just... Like at his peak, yeah. So yeah, he was very sharp during the camp, and I think not just in calculation, we also played some games with each other, and that was more fun. Yeah.
Nice, mostly blitz, or did you play some training games, or what?
I can't reveal all the details.
Oh, okay. Nice. Well, we're really, all the chess fans are really excited for the Olympiad. So, how do you handicap various teams' chances this year?
I think USA has on paper one of the strongest teams, and also I think Russia will bring that A team, but they have not shown their best game, I feel, so far. We always expect them to do well, and I don't think they've gotten a goal since quite some time, yes. And if this time with Anand coming into the team, I think we have changed place actually. Usually when we go, we are the underdogs. But I think now it's just impossible to call us the underdogs.
Yeah, it's very hard when you think of any of the three teams of Russia, the United States, and India. It's hard to think of any of those teams as like the scrappy underdog without much of a chance. I mean, there's just so many amazing players on every team.
Yeah, also China, I think, will be one of the main competition.
Yeah, and you posted a picture, speaking of China, of you hanging out with Wei Ye.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get a chance to play some Blitz?
No, we played a lot of games in the tournament, so...
Okay, yeah, so rest in between.
Yeah, but I did play a few games with my own teammates, and we got along well, made some new friends as well. And yeah, I mean, Wei, I think the problem is he doesn't know English so well, so it's the conversations are very limited, but that's how it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I'm sure he's working on it.
Yeah, I guess so.
So one thing that I am Sagar Shah of Chess Base India. Shout out to him and thanks for his help arranging this. Mentioned that I should definitely ask you about is a new sponsorship. So what's the story with that?
Well, I'm now. I actually last year I had a pretty great run. I started around 2670 or something. I don't know, something like that. And then I played really well. I had very consistent performances and I managed to win bronze in Asian Championship and I had a good performance in World Cup when I crossed 2700. So I definitely felt that I'm now playing good chess and I just want to take it to the next level. Like now my peak rating was something like 2723 and now I'm aiming at the top 10 spots. So basically, I wanted to build a team around me, and because all the top professionals, they work really hard. So, and it's not easy to compete without, you know, proper team and just working alone. So that's why I was looking for sponsors where I can build a team and make a big jump from this mediocre 2700 to top 10 places.
Yeah, well, a lot of listeners will be rooting for you. So could you break down for us, how does it work once you decide, like, okay, you have a plan in place, you know that you'd like to hire some people to help you. So what's the next step in terms of finding a sponsor?
Well, I'm not really sure because I'm good at chess, but I'm not so good at such things. And
yeah, that's sort of why I was curious. I mean, you're a young man, you know, 23 years old, and obviously like amazing at chess. And but stuff like that, like we've talked before with other guests about how some chess players are not so good with logistics. In the three-part interview with Vishyanand's wife, she talked about how she arranges everything for him and does all of his planning, and he's gotten a little bit better with age, but he's always just like, okay, tell me where to be and when to be there, and you do everything else. So the scale of finding a team, I guess you have people to help you with that, a project
well,
like
yeah,
that?
I mean, I have a lot of friends, and I think Sagar, he's helping me out a lot, and otherwise, like seconds, coaches, I'm in touch with many of them. So that's not an issue. But yeah, I can relate to what Anand says. I mean, I really hate the paperwork.
Yeah.
So I really can't do that. I can't stand it.
And there's so much of it because you guys travel so much at your level.
Yeah, exactly. So like, and also chess is not an easy game. Yeah. So you have no energy left for such things.
Yeah, this is true.
Also, it's just a fancy way of saying that I'm lazy.
Well, maybe lazy or conserving your energy for studying chess. Let's go with that definition. So,
yeah.
So do you have a sponsor lined up at this point?
Well, I have a company in India, ONGC. It's a bit complicated how it is in India, but I can say they are kind of like sponsors, yes, that I can say. But it's not on a very large scale. For like, I think building a team, I think you would need more corporate kind of sponsorship. So I'm looking for that. I'm approaching some companies and stuff like that, and trying to see if I can build a team just for 1 year. Also, like I think if I The problem is usually I work mostly alone, and there are some limitations, like how much you can do yourself. So if you have some people around you who can help you out, I think I don't know a single top player who doesn't have a team around him. So it just really says that you need that to go at the very top. And that's what I'm striving for. And that the first step for that is to look for sponsorship, as it is not really, let's say, not really simple without it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the timing, like you say, seems good because you're...
Exactly. This is the time. If I get it after 2-3 years, then it won't make any, much of sense. But right now, that's I'm like more very energetic and I have a lot of ambitions. So if I get one now, I think I can really do justice to it.
That would be awesome. And congratulations, by the way, on qualifying for the Tata Steel Masters next year. I'm sure that's one event you want to put a lot of prep in for.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I was looking forward to it. I'm like already looking forward to it and thinking about it. But of course, it's too early to start its preparations because I have also many other tournaments lined up. But yeah, that's one of the most elite level tournaments, and a good showing there would make me happy.
Yeah, so for listeners who don't know, I think a lot will, but there's every year Tata Steel hosts a beautiful tournament, and there's a challenger section which has many grandmasters, but not quite in the top 20 in the world, or at least peaking at the top 20 in the world level. And the winner of that tournament gets to go to the masters section, which is just an elite tournament, elitist of the elite every single year. And by winning the challenger section this year, which you won by a clear point, right?
Yeah.
You now qualify to play in the Masters. And I love that format, and I think a lot of other chess fans do too, because we enjoy seeing the top players in action, but it's nice to see some different players mixed in as well.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes these top players, they have played against each other so much, so sometimes it gets really dull. I mean, they know each other inside out. So it's nice to have a mix feel. And it was funny, like, I saw the results and Carlsen actually scored points against Wesley and the least rated, like from below, like four players. I don't know how to say it, like the last seeds. And he drew against all the other top players. So he will be definitely be happy to have them again.
Right. And speaking of Carlsen, you famously played him in Isle of Man with the black pieces and gave him quite a run and ended up with a draw. So I know that Sagar has already interviewed you a bit about this, but for listeners who may not have heard it or having had a little bit more time to reflect, could you tell us a little bit about what it was like to play and analyze with the world champion?
Yeah, I was very excited to play, actually, when I saw the pairings. Because, yeah, you don't play against a world champion every day, yeah? And not against such a dominant one, that too. And he was winning, like, game after game. Like, he had just defeated, I think, he was on 5.5 out of 6, something like that. So, he was, like, I thought he's just steamrolling the tournament, and I might be meeting him at the worst moment, but I didn't think of the result too much, actually. I was just so excited to play, and I managed to play really well. And but okay, it was a pity to not realize that I was slightly better in the last few moves, and I thought, okay, I just have to simplify and make a draw, but apparently I was even slightly better. So that's one regret I have. But yeah, overall, it was a lot of fun and exciting to play against him.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So when you're playing someone like that, does it cloud your analysis at all if it's your first time playing the world champion? Are you able to just calculate as clearly as you ever do? Or do you can you get distracted by sort of the stage that you're on?
Well, I think before a game, you overthink, actually. But when you start playing, I don't think it affects so much, maybe at some critical junctures, but after you sit at the board, you're just playing, your competitiveness comes back, and you just like, and I think no chess player likes to lose, and so you bring your best game right there. So I think before a game, there might be some nervousness and something like that, but when the game starts, I think I was not nervous at all.
Excellent. And I know that you've spoken about how that result and the fact that not only that you drew, but that you had chances for more at points, that's given you confidence going forward to really push your pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
So Vita, I host this chess podcast comes out every week. So leading up to the candidates tournament, I felt like we were talking about it, previewing it every week. I mean, naturally, as chess fans, we're excited to see chess history unfold before our eyes and see who's going to get to play for the world championship. And now that we know who's going to be playing Magnus, we're basically going to be talking about the world championship for every week for the next 6 months, or at least until we get tired of it. And then maybe we'll take a break in the middle before it actually starts. And then when it ramps up, we'll start to do some more previews. But since you've got a lofty perch as you know, an elite player yourself, what's your take on this matchup? How do you rate Fabiano's chances versus Magnus Carlsen?
Well, Fabiano, he really surprised me. I mean, not in the candidates, but in Grenke. I mean, I thought, like, after you play such a tough tournament, like, for 13 rounds, and when you win it, I think your mindset is like, okay, now I just want to relax and I want to chill a bit. I want to enjoy the moment. And you're not really in the competitive state of mind to play another tournament, but he really surprised me by playing really well. I mean, only in the first game he was in trouble, but after that he scored three more wins, and that's just excellent, and I was really surprised. So yeah, I mean, it will be not easy money for Carlsen for sure, and if I had to put odds, I would say it's 50-50.
Okay.
That's a bold statement, but I mean, with the current form, I think.
That's the same thing that Yaroslav Zhirabuk said. I think it's the exact same odds that he gave, which to me, I mean, okay, my opinion should be discounted compared to those of guys like yourself. But I mean, the fact that Magnus has draw odds has to give him a slight edge, doesn't it?
Slight edge to whom?
To Magnus, because he has draw odds in the match. Like if it's 12-12, he retains his title.
No, there'll be a tiebreak, right?
Okay, we should look into this before we discuss any further. I guess, yeah, of course, there'd be a rapid tiebreaker as there was last time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he won against Karjak in a tiebreak, and I at least I'm not aware that it was changed.
Okay. You are on the record as having worked on Anish Giri's team, and he was publicly working with Kramnik. Were you involved with any of the candidates this year?
No, I was not. I was just a spectator, a very enthusiastic spectator, nothing
nice.
More than that.
Yes, just like the rest of us.
Yes.
So what's it like to study and work with GM Giri?
It was very nice. I think the main factor was that we are of the same age, although he's married and has a kid. But yeah, we are of the same age. So we got along well. He's a very nice guy, very friendly. And so yeah, it was very pleasant working with him. I learned a lot, clearly chess-wise. And after working with him, my rating increased a lot as well. So I got some positives from him. And yeah, it was new experience because I had not worked with any other top player before that. So there were a lot of things that I didn't know. And it makes a difference to watch it closely.
Yeah. And you and Anish are roughly the same age, and you were the former under 14 world champion. Do you guys go like way back to world youth tournaments and stuff like that?
No, it's funny that I've never seen Anish in any of the world youth events. I asked him that and I don't remember what he replied, but yeah, he never even played, I think. So I have absolutely no recollection from the childhood. It's really surprising that not even a single tournament. I think he was changing federation so much that he didn't have time to play. And already he was extremely strong when he was 14, 15, so it didn't make sense for him to play after that. But yeah, before that, we never even met each other.
Oh, interesting. And Anish, of course, in addition to being an amazing player, is a bit famous for his Twitter game. He's pretty funny on Twitter and less hesitant than some other grandmasters to sort of, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't know if I would go so far as say take shots, but poke fun at some of the other elite players. So did he give you Twitter lessons as well as the chess instruction that you guys exchanged?
Well, like I was thinking after the Tata Steel tournament that both the winners, Anish and Magnus, they had very high level of Twitter game.
Maybe yeah, they
that
do.
For success. So I was thinking that I have to up my game as well. Yeah, I'm really falling back there. In my next year's preparation, I have to really think about it.
Well, you've definitely upped your Facebook game, so that's a good start.
Yeah, but I think the Twitter is the key. I mean, for World Top 10, I think that's it, Twitter.
So what can we do? I guess you just need to sit down and come up with some material, try to carve out some jokes.
But it's funny. Actually, Anish, he's exactly the same as he's on Twitter as he's in real life. It's just him. He's he likes to have some fun from time to time. And like even when I win, he never really says like congratulations. He'll always twist it and say it in a different way. So that's his way. And I don't really mind.
Yeah, well, I enjoy it a lot. I mean, I felt like...
Yeah, I mean, there should be some fun. There should be some entertainment value, right?
I mean, yeah. Sometimes I feel like he gets a little too much blowback. I mean, I've talked before about how I think the whole thing about him drawing is overdone at this point. But also, I mean, chess is... It should be fun, and it's all in good fun if you're on social media. It's supposed to be social. Yeah. So.
And I never think he crossed any line in social media. So yeah. I thought... It was always in good humor and with no hard feelings. It's just his way of making it more fun, more entertaining.
Yeah. So
and
in
terms of mine, have also said that they just like that was more interesting than all the previews they had read about the candidates. The Twitter war was more fun.
Yeah, I was just excited that it was like out in the open that he's on Kramnik's team for this tournament because. Chess fans like myself, we find that stuff interesting. I mean, I'm sure at the top levels, it can be a pretty insular world, and you always wonder who's working with who. And sometimes it's shrouded in secrecy, sometimes it isn't. But it's interesting to try to put the pieces together.
Yeah, I mean, I see the positives of both sides. Like if you tell you're in someone's team, maybe it can be intimidating to them. On the other hand, they know... They might think that, okay, he might play this opening or that opening because his second has played that, something like this. So, but I think it's for a spectator, I also like to know who is with who and when there is some clarity.
Yeah, I like to know as well. So, switching subjects, Vita, our listeners for Perpetual Chess are always interested in improving at chess, and a lot of them, like myself, are adults with jobs and responsibilities, so we may only have a limited time to improve. Now, you've got a YouTube video with a great list of book recommendations. Your enthusiasm for chess books really shines through, but rather than just talk about that again, I wanted to highlight one point that I saw you mention, which was the importance of studying intensely when you only have a little bit of time. You mentioned that if you're studying and you have the engine on and you're going back and forth with the engine, or if you're on Facebook or if you're checking your email, you're really not studying. And I think that's an important thing for people to keep in mind.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I myself forget that point usually. Like, for example, yesterday I was watching the Commonwealth Games because I like other sports as well. And I was watching the games and I was trying to prepare. And I realized that it's just our human mind is not made for multitasking. It's just, I mean, I like pretended that I practiced chess, but after 1 hour I realized that the output was just nothing. So, yeah, what I said was like, it's very important to have focused work when you have little time because in this world, I think it's very the work which is easy and doesn't require a lot of effort can be easily replicated. So, and the work which is valued the most is which is not so easy. So, if that makes any sense. So, I think it's just important to have like focused work when you have little time and try to gain the most output, because sometimes we just like watch movies or even like while listening songs, I can't practice. I have some, I just can't multitask actually.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that writers, for example, I can't remember the name of the program, but there's a program that writers use that just shuts off the rest of your internet so that when you're... Yeah, so that when you're writing online, it won't allow you to do anything else. So it seems like chess players could benefit from that as well, because...
Yeah, I know a few players who do that. They're like, they're not so much internet addicted. So, and they're successful, so probably says something about them.
Yeah, and what's your general training regimen like? So you've mentioned that you're really motivated right now. You feel like this is your window of opportunity to really make a push to go from top 30 to top 10, hopefully. So how would you approach your studies? Let's say you're able to get enough funding to get a small team in place. Like, how would you budget your time?
Well, right now, I just came from a tournament, but still I think putting in some hours. But usually when I'm training very seriously, it just goes from morning till evening. And just because I like it, like once I'm in the zone, once I'm focused, I really try to go deeper. But sometimes there are some times where I really can't focus, and like I look at chess for like half an hour, then probably some YouTube will come up, some distractions. Right. I think many people have the same issue, like the problem of procrastination. And I'm also vulnerable to it, but when I'm serious and when I'm in training, I just cut it out. I just go in the zone and I work very seriously. So it depends. Usually when I'm at home, it's a more laid-back attitude, but also I'm always thinking about the game, so... that's always there. Anish says that I'm lazy usually. Huh. But yeah, I think it's just he ran out of things to say. So
right, yeah. Needed a new jab for you.
Yes.
So do you have a particular aspect of your game that you're focusing on right now? Is there an area that you feel like you need to improve above others?
Not really. I mean... there's no particular thing. I think overall I'm just interested, I like to use curiosity to motivate me. Like sometimes I'm just so interested to know why this happens. Like even like, for example, Caruana won the tournament. I'm just wondering like what was so special about his game and some things like that. Then I'll analyze his games. I'll look at it. And I'll do the same with my games as well, just to know why this works, why this does not work. So I use this question of why a lot.
Okay, that makes sense. And it's, I'm sure at your level, so much of the game is about psychology and about attaining peak performance.
I think it's just that I don't understand chess completely. I think many top players, if you meet them, they'll also say the same, that there are still a lot of things that they don't know. So it's just a continuous process of knowing the game better. And that's what I'm trying to do.
So a lot of game analysis as opposed to sort of computer work and calculation training and stuff like that?
And a lot of game analysis also takes place on computer.
Right.
Now it's just impossible to go without engines. It's just, there are some downsides to it, but it's just like I think impossible to work without engines because... your competitors have them and you will feel, let's say, inferior if you have not checked it. You will not be that confident. So
yeah, I've had some interesting conversations about engines because some guests on the show have stressed, especially to lower rated up-and-comers or people just looking to improve, the importance of not using engines immediately after a game. But then others have told me off the record that, you know, grandmasters may say that you shouldn't do that, but they're human too. And when a game ends, they can't control themselves either. And they just want to turn on the engine and find out what they missed. What's been your experience, both in terms of your own games and your peers? Like, are there people who are able to look at the games and analyze them without even looking at an engine? Or are people first figuring out what the critical spots were and maybe then going and studying without the engine?
To be honest, I hate using engines. I just hate, but it's a sad necessity which I have to do because it's everybody else is doing it and you can't go without checking it. But like I really, really enjoy when after a game, I'm analyzing over the board with my opponent, some of my friends. We're just trying to look at things and there are some mistakes, so we take back and then we try to find some brilliant move. And when you find it, that joy, you know?
Yeah.
That's so beautiful. I just, like sometimes you find some move and it's so pretty. So it reminds me of the days when I was like very young and there were not, computers were not so strong. And I used to, that's why I got into chess. For this feeling, so I really, really enjoy when you can come up with yourself with such ideas, and it's very rare that you overrule an engine. So I think it preserves some freshness also. So yeah, I mean, if I have to give an advice, or if I have to choose, let's say I would really make a world without engines, but that's not going to happen. So I have to use them.
Right.
But yeah, if I have to analyze after a game without engine, I don't mind at all. I just really enjoy that.
And when you played Magnus in Isle of Man, and you mentioned afterward that you got to do a brief post-mortem with him, and that, yeah, you know, some ideas he saw that you didn't see, and some ideas you saw that he didn't see, and some positions you guys didn't agree on completely, which is, of course, natural.
It's nice when there's some mystery, yeah? I mean, we don't know who is right, so that's
right.
Mystery.
At least not till you turn the engine on. So
Exactly.
So that's why I was going to ask, did you guys, like, in a situation like that, would you have a moment where you might say, all right, we have to check this out on the engine, or would you avoid doing that in the immediate post-mortem?
I think we both eventually check with engine, but I mean, I don't really get it. Like during the game, I think we just exchange our thoughts. Like what we thought was, I think it with any player, we just say, yeah, okay, you could have played this one, but there was this problem. So then we try to think, maybe this works, something like this. But of course, we check with engine, and sometimes it's really depressing. It shows that how bad you played.
Right.
And without engines, that's a blessing that you don't know how bad you played.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. So, Vidit, and you've got a nice bio up on your Facebook page, and in it you talk about, so you won the World Youth when you were 14 years old, and then around 15 you were about 2,500. So, you know, to an outsider and to a casual chess fan, obviously you were doing quite well. But you had a real struggle getting the Grandmaster title. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, it was funny. I was 2,500 when I was 14, 15, something like this. I don't remember exactly when. I was like 25, 30, 20, something like this. But I was really struggling to get GM norms. And one of the reasons was I was just so result-oriented. Like, there were many instances where I came really close and then I failed. I remember some tournament where I just need to win in one game and okay, I'll make the norm. So I play a very good game. I'm two pawns up or something like this in an endgame. And when it's really close, I just used to get stressed out. I used to panic, make some mistake and end up drawing. This happened not just once, but twice, thrice and many number of times. In one game, I was exchange up. And as soon as I became exchange up, I got excited and nervous. And I gave back the exchange in two moves. It was, I think, if I have to point it out, I think I was not good at handling the pressure. And that was the reason why I really struggled with the Grandmaster norms. And eventually when I got it, I didn't even know that I made the GM norm. So I just didn't care about it after a while. And that helped me.
So,
ironically, the first GM norm I missed was on my 15th birthday, and I became GM on my 18th birthday. So,
right, and you said well north of the ELO requirement by that point. You just needed the norms.
Yeah, I mean now when I look back, I find that my attitude was so silly. But okay, you learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure something like that is something a lot of chess players, if they want to push to a higher level, they have to learn to deal with whatever the challenge is. They have to learn to deal with feeling the weight of the moment and sort of working through that.
Yeah, it's very easy to say not to focus on the result or something like this, but when you're in the position, you really care about it. So it's some people are really natural at it, and they have lots of, let's say, confidence or competitive edge this way. But I think for some people, you have to develop it.
So do you feel like you learned anything tangible from the experience in terms of, because obviously you've done amazing, but you know, hopefully you've got even bigger mountains to climb. So do you think that you could be faced with a similar issue at a higher scale, or do you feel like you've matured and hopefully you're able to just focus on the chess when you play in the next few years?
Well, it did happen to me again when I was very close to 2700, and I made a bunch of draws, and then I dropped to 2690 or something. So it happened again, but I had learned, so it was easier to overcome, like, comparatively. Like, then I realized that I should not just focus on that. Rating is just, it'll happen when I have the strength. And I know many people who are, like, extremely strong, but similar kind of attitude stops them. So I think one thing which will help is a very honest, brutal evaluation of yourself and to be completely objective. Because when you yourself are playing, emotions come into the game and it disrupts your objectivity. So I guess if you can just be more objective and truthful about the situation to yourself, I guess it helps. I mean, if I have to give an advice, I would give that.
Yeah, and it's the classic, easier said than done. But at least when your games aren't going on, it can be a lot of chess players struggle in particular with being objective during their games. But at least when the game's over, you can at least pick apart the game and, you know, compare what you were thinking at the time to what appears to be true in hindsight, and then adjust your psychology from there, or at least try to.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy. For example, when I'm watching the top games and I'm a spectator, I'm looking at it, I see the moves, okay, this is so easy. I mean, right. Just this is so easy, why don't I make it? But when I'm playing myself, I realize, okay, it's not so easy. So, because I think those two are different things, to be in a relaxed state of mind and to be in the game. So that's why I just can't comment on the players, because I know myself that it's not easy.
Yeah, and for sure.
I wish I could have this same level of objectivity out from when I'm playing myself. And I guess it can be developed over the years.
Yeah, probably there's no substitute for experience, I would guess.
Yeah, definitely. That helps.
So you mentioned in terms of discussing this this push to get the GM title, and in terms of other sort of plateaus you've hit, that every once in a while, like every chess player, you've had a few thoughts of wanting to quit chess. It's something I can certainly relate to, and I think others as well. So how do you push through moments like that where it just feels so, you know, chess just feels so daunting and so so intractable in terms of how to push through a plateau?
Yeah, the thing is, I felt like quitting chess sometimes, but it was just an emotional reaction. For example, I remember when I had like a +6 position against Widler, and I spoiled it. And I drew, and because of that, we drew the match with Russia or lost the match, something like this, in World Team Championship. That was extremely painful for me. So, in a moment of desperation, I messaged my friend and said, okay, that's it. I'm going to quit chess.
Yeah.
But okay, quickly after one good night's sleep, you get to your senses. And then you realize that, okay, that was just a complete emotional reaction. And I mean, I know a few people who are like, they can't, they don't know what else to do. So,
right.
apart from chess.
So have you ever taken an extended break from chess?
In recent times, no, actually. I don't remember taking a big break. But when I was young, school made me take breaks. So I don't know which is useful to sometimes get away from the game, try to enjoy a bit otherwise. But I think at the professional level, it doesn't really happen. You can have like a 1 week vacation or something like this, but top players, I think, are always thinking about the game. So I at least I don't plan to take a break in recent time.
Good. And What else? You've mentioned that you're a sports fan. If you, when you do spend time away from the chessboard, how do you like to spend your time?
Oh, I love to play all kind of sports. I mean, just there should. If someone asks, like, okay, do you want to play this game? I never say no. I don't recall saying no to anybody. But I like basketball a lot. I really enjoy the game. I'm not that good at it, of course, but I'm not that tall, but I really enjoy the game. I like badminton. Again, I'm very average at it, but just I enjoy playing. I like to swim. The only game I have not tried yet is tennis.
You mentioned that you read Nadal's biography or autobiography.
Yeah. I like to read sports biographies because I think I draw inspiration from it. And of course, I mean, the games are different, but I think a lot of the struggle or the path is the same. So I'm sure, I mean, I find that I can learn a lot from other people's success, and I try to draw inspiration, and it really helps me. I don't know about others, but some people don't find it that useful, but personally I just like to read other people's story, and maybe if I can relate to it, pick up some points.
Was there anything in particular from Nadal that you picked up?
Yeah, I mean, many things. One of the things was he stressed it quite a lot in his book that he never underestimated his opponent because of his trainer. He, like, every game he played against lower seeds, he played as if he was playing world number one. And I think it's not a thing which he just says. I think he even does it. Like, when you see him play, you can see that intensity in his shots, in his game, in his face. I mean, you can just feel it. So, I mean, that's really not easy to do. I mean, to take every game and play with, like, complete energy and enthusiasm. Just, I think it's not so easy. And that's one thing to take away from it.
Yeah, and you're probably at a level. I know you've done pretty well in some of these big open tournaments. And you're kind of at a level where you have a good chance of winning those tournaments, and you kind of need to make some hay in them in order to ascend to the sort of final level where you get invitations to the elite round robins. So knowing how to take every game extremely seriously, I would gather, is an important skill for you in particular at this point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm very competitive in any case, so I hate losing. I think nobody likes it, but I hate it more than others. So I really try to give my all. But there is some difference. Sometimes you relax, I guess. But yeah, I mean, the point I wanted to say was, like, I'm competitive, and even if I'm playing a lower-rated player, I don't take it lightly.
That's good. Yeah, and it shows in your results. So, speaking of your results, Vita, I've only got one or two more questions, but one of them is, we were talking before we recorded briefly, and you mentioned what your next tournament was. Could you let our listeners know, like, what you've got planned? Like, what events do you have firmly on your calendar coming up?
I'm going to play in a short round robin tournament in Sigemen. It's in Sweden. It's six players and five round robin. And after that, I'll play in Poikovsky in Russia. And after that, I'll also play one open tournament in Denmark, Extracon Open. So I have a lot of tournaments lined up. And, like, I believe that I play much better in closed events rather than open, because that suits my style. And I think I've played, like, four closed events, and I've won three of them. I think I've never won an open tournament.
Okay.
I mean, come, like, second or third maybe, but I never won it. So I'm more excited for the closed events.
So do you know who else is in the field in the tournament in Sweden?
Yeah, it's a very interesting lineup. There's Morozevic, so you can expect some lot of funky games.
Yeah, the legendary GM.
Yes, also the other players are very fighting players like Ayantari, Grandelius, Benjamin, and Linus Johansson. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Yeah, so it's a very interesting field. I think most of them are very young. I mean, Arjen, Grandelius, Gledura, everyone. They are all young people, and there is Morozevic. So it's a very interesting lineup.
Yeah, that should be exciting. And that's in early May?
Yeah, that's from 4th to 8th May.
Okay. And then looking farther out, I guess you know you have the Olympiad. Do you have anything else like circled on your calendar for later in the year beyond those three events?
I'm playing in some leagues, and I'll also play in European Club Cup and some other events. I might play in Isle of Man.
Nice.
I really like that place, and the organizer is very nice, and I like that place a lot, and I have good memories from it, so I'll try to make that happen. And apart from that, yeah, I mean, these are a few of the tournaments that I plan to play. Otherwise, actually, I want to even make chess more popular, so I'll probably do something not for myself, but something I could do for the community.
That's great. Yeah, and for listeners who are not following Vidit on social media, I definitely recommend checking out his Facebook page. You share more than a lot of top players do. You don't just say, oh, I'm here now. You actually reflect on the events a little bit and show a few pictures. So thank you for doing that.
Thanks a lot.
And so last but not least, Vita, do you have any stories of like brush? I mean, you've had so many brushes with, you know, legendary chess players, from seeing Anand at the Olympiad to playing Carlsen. But do you have any other like standout stories from your time traveling and playing?
I have a story. I don't know if someone will like it, but yeah,
that's the perfect beginning to a story.
Well, Anand was in the camp, and I think, let's say someone asked me, how is he as a person? Like, he was there in the camp, and he asked me, like, how is he? He's going to come today, and what should we do? Something like this. Then I said, yeah, he's very nice, and he's a complete gentleman, of course, but just don't start a conversation yourself. I think he doesn't like it, and he might get angry. So just whenever he says something, then only you reply. And I trolled one person for some time, and then finally I gave in and then said that, okay. Then he realized that probably I was pulling his leg. And
right.
So yeah, sometimes I can become a troll. I think that's Anish.
that's funny. Yeah, yeah. Under Anish's tutelage, you've learned.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Anand doesn't mind, and I was just pulling his leg.
That's Anand funny, yeah. When you told that story, I was thinking he would make for a tough podcast guest in that case, because I wouldn't be able to ask him anything.
No. And I think Anand doesn't know that I pulled this prank, of course.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Vita, I'm guessing if listeners want to follow your adventures and cheer you on, your Facebook page is the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I'm most active on Facebook right now.
Okay, until you get your Twitter GM norms, at least.
I'll try to get my rating to 2800 on Twitter as well.
Yeah, just make sure you power through the slump. Excellent. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time. This was a lot of fun for me, so I really appreciate it. And, you know, I'll be watching and rooting for you in upcoming events.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. I had a lot of fun discussing as well.
Excellent. Okay. Take care, Vita.
Thank you.
Special thanks goes out to my Patreon and PayPal Perpetual partners. Without the generous support of the chess community, Perpetual Chess would not exist in its current form. I would like to thank Adam Vrankulj, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Chris Wainscott, Chad Hilton, Chris Lott, Christopher Wood, Coach Jay's Chess Academy, Chris Flanagan, Daniel Naylor, Daniel Schaefer, Gary Andrews, Greg Shahadi, James Bonastia, Jason Dunbar, Jennifer Valens, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Johnny McMenamin, Kelly Palmer, Krishna Gopalakrishnan, Lorraine Dore, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson, Matthew Tedesco, Pascal Charbonneau, Paul Swaney, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randall Temple, Ricky Grahova, Rob Lazorchek, Robert Steiner, Tatya Vabrahamian, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotella, Victor Vrankulj, Zhao Cheng, and last but not least, Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks, everyone. I'll catch you all next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.